Hey, batter, batter.
Are you ready to hit a home run with flavor? Step up to the plate and swing by Penn Station East Coast Subs, where every bite is a grand slam. Craving a classic Philly cheesesteak or maybe a savory chicken teriyaki? Or how about loading up on their delicious fresh-cut fries? Call it a triple play by ordering Penn Station's signature fresh-squeezed lemonade. When it comes to subs, Penn Station is the big league. Order online at penn-station.com or stop at a store near you. Penn Station East Coast Subs.
Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for Episode 5 of Season 8 of The Amazing Race Canada. It's me, Jessica Lise. I'm here once again to break down everything that happened in this episode. And with me, as always, is a gentleman who always pizzas and never French fries, Dan Heaton.
Oh, holy sugar, Jess. What is going on? I don't even know where to start. Very normal 35 minutes. And then the last like 5 or 7, I was like, what is going on? What is happening? Yeah.
Did I pass out and go into a 2-month long coma and wake up in Amazing Race Australia?
Well, yeah, for multiple reasons. I mean, we did have, the Canadian, the way the episode ended was very Amazing Race Canada, though still rather weird. And then the last like 5 seconds, I was like, yeah, I mean, we kind of thought it might happen that they would bring back some of the teams because the way that John said cannot continue at this time. But still seeing it, I'm like, wow, we'll dive into it. But man, crazy ending to the episode, regardless of the preview, really.
I am going to need a lot of explanation next week. Like, I'm going to need way more than we got the last time we shook things up thusly. I'm going to need a solid 5 minutes on why did they go away and why are they coming back and how come it's okay for them to come back? All the things.
Well, yeah, because it's almost different now, too, because, I mean, we did lose a team this week. Amazingly enough, a team was actually eliminated by John on the mat and will stay that way.
Never say never, Dan. Next week, they could be coming back again. Like, nothing is permanent in this brave new Amazing Race Canada world.
Yeah. And I don't know, Jess. I mean, I think we probably should talk about this episode and kind of the craziness too, but I don't know how far we should go before we dig into next week too, because that's crazy.
Well, why don't we just start in order and we'll start up at the top of the episode because there's plenty to talk about here. There's just more of it is kind of backloaded. That doesn't mean that there wasn't good stuff. Like, the rest of the episode was perfectly fine. I feel like I'm watching like this tennis match between British Columbia and Alberta, and the ball is the Amazing Race Canada.
They just keep going back and forth or going to different. This is not a straight trek across Canada from one side to the other. This is, let's go over here. Okay, let's go. And then also Team Alberta was just so strong. But yeah, we went this week, we have a drive to Calgary, but then they fly to Vernon, British Columbia, which I don't believe they have been to before, and did a bunch of tasks. Like, literally, John was announcing task number 3 and we were like 15 minutes in. I mean, this was bam, 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 bam for some teams. Other teams, it was not so much, but a lot going on, Jess.
Yeah, and I don't hate this, Dan. I feel like I want more tasks and less focusing on how each individual person did on each individual task. I feel like Amazing Race Canada once again did a stellar job of showing us the highlights, whereas I feel like Amazing Race US would have made an entire meal out of just the paragliding. Like, they would have been paragliding at, 9:36. And we would have been waiting for the rest of the leg to do anything.
I agree. And I've always talked about how I like that they do so much. Yeah, because really, if you think about it, I mean, paragliding is cool, but we pretty much were like, okay, let's start out and show them do it. Marika's a little scared. That took 2 seconds. And then they focus on, Kathy falling down. But really, it was like, you have, once they got through Julian Cathy, the last three teams, it's like, yep, they're up, they're happy, they're down. Okay, let's move on. There wasn't this like long process. And, you know, even Cathy, you know, falling and ow, as she said to the commercial break, but that could have easily been like a 10-minute segment. And instead she was just like, you know, okay, I'm up. I was surprised she got to do it again right there. I thought maybe she'd have to go to the back, but I don't know the logistics. Maybe things there was other factors like wind and stuff that affected her.
Yeah, it was hard to tell exactly what happened there, but I think we've seen enough paragliding across this franchise to know that it is very possible that you will stumble in exactly that kind of way. And it looked to me like you didn't necessarily, like, it wasn't one of those situations with like the bungee jump where you have to gear up and like clip in and jump and then get reeled in again and then take all your stuff off and then somebody else can gear up and they can go second. I feel like you could be ready to go right away after the person in front of you took their leap. So it was a little bit less of a bottleneck in that regard.
Well, yeah, and they split them up. You know, that's another thing I wanted to mention, too, is the way that really a big portion early on, there was good news is there was some flipping around. This was not how they ended, but you had a case where there was like a mad dash for the sign up board, which played a pretty big role. But again, because they did so many tasks, it wasn't as big. But the top three teams, not in the order they arrived at the sign up board, but of course, super guys with 100 maps, Brendan and Connor got there first. And then Fernella and Jesse Marika crashing into each other. But those three teams in a different order were the top three. But I don't think it's as much about that. I think it's as much about the fact that those teams are all really good and they just keep going forward, basically.
You know, Dan, we always talk about how there's like always a clear front runner batch and a clear like middle of the road batch and then a clear like ballast batch. That's not a very nice thing to say. Everybody here is a star in their own right, and they've brought a lot to the race, but there is definitely the cream is rising to the top here. And I am very delighted and surprised that Fernella is in that front runner group, because every week they seem to be more and more entertaining, as well as like bringing out these really surprising skill sets that I may not have necessarily expected they would be good at. I think we saw that for sure in the biathlon roadblock, but across the leg, they just had a great leg.
They're very consistent. And I mean that, like, you know, you look at it and you've got like Jesse, who's an Olympian, and Marika is very skilled, and Brendan and Connor, you know, seem to be pretty fast and they seem to be very good with directions. But kind of between those two, in a way, you have Fernella, who, I mean, they had that one leg where they were 7th out of 9, but we're not in any real danger. But beyond that, like you said, even when like last week they were having a hard time last time driving and drove off the road. And like you said, we'll get into, you know, Franca basically again shooting well, but not being able to ski. And still, it's just there are teams, and we've seen this in past iterations of the show, that just seem to have that forward movement, where even when they struggle, they don't really lose their spot. They might drop a place or whatever, but a part of that, maybe they're just really good with navigation, but they just seem to kind of progress through the race and never get like totally stuck. And then you have other teams that are kind of ping pong balls where they're amazing, then they're terrible, then they're amazing, then they're terrible. And Fernella is one of those in the first category. They are very solid, and it makes me think, you know, those types of teams just keep going forward because they're never like dead last. They're always in that 2, 3, 4, maybe even 1 at times.
Yeah. I mean, Fernella had one bad leg, and the rest of the time it's kind of been, you know, they went 4th, 1st, 7th, 3rd, 2nd. And I think we could see them on the podium for the entire rest of the race. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too, though, with the impact of some teams being gone, because even looking at the top group, I would probably put for most weeks, Beverly and Veronica might be in that group. But then you might say, oh, Catherine and Craig would be up there. And then you have kind of a group of five. I mean, somebody might get eliminated. But again, with teams kind of not continuing, it's all of a sudden you look and you're like, wow, there's a bit more separation here. And it's going to be interesting to see if that continues. I mean, it's not, again, that the other teams are hopeless, but you do see where Cedric and Deshaun and Cassie and Jameik, for example, they get kind of near the back, but even when there's an equalizer, somehow end up near the back again, which is weird.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to me to see teams, especially with these two second chance teams, it's interesting to me to see that they're, I don't get the sense that we're going to have a situation like we did in the last season of Amazing Race US, where we had one of the returnee teams just sort of like clinging by their fingernails for the entire, like all the way up into the final four. I think Cassie and Jameik are having a great time. I love seeing them in it, but I think the order in which they finished in these last two legs has kind of suggested to me that they were going to go out early anyway. And the same thing with Julie and Kathy, obviously they're kind of doing the, you know, they got the Michael Moe treatment basically. The first time we could eliminate someone, we eliminated them. And then the very next time we had a chance to eliminate them, we did.
Yeah. We've had five episodes and last place has been Julie and Kathy, Cord and Allie, then Cassie and Jameik and Julie and Kathy. It's like, what is happening? I don't understand. It's like next time Cassie and Jameik. No, I'm not saying it's going to be them, but I'm just, it's like, because of the teams coming back and everything, you have this weird scenario where there's a bunch of teams that haven't been in any danger at all. And they're like, wow, they're really struggling. Oh, they were third. It's like, Brendan Connor this week, a bunch of times they seem to be struggling third place. So yeah, there's an interesting split. And I think granted some of the teams having to quit definitely, I would temporarily quit, of course. Definitely, I think, exacerbated that for sure.
It's almost akin to a Survivor or Big Brother season where it's like you have the main alliance and then you have the people that the main alliance is going to pick off. And then it's going to pick up and get interesting again once you have the alliance having to start to turn on itself. Not that these people are in any kind of alliance, but they are certainly, there may not be any surprises for a couple of weeks.
And I should also mention the top three teams we've been talking about all have express passes.
So, even better.
So if they struggle, assuming they don't pull a John and Jessica, or that Canadian team, I forget their name from season one, that these three teams are, if they have a situation where they're really in trouble, you know, like where they just think, like if they're in a Cassie and Jameik situation or Cedric and Deshaun this week where they're dead last, they'll use it or, you know, and you would think in theory, barring something catastrophic, be able to survive. So that almost makes it more likely. Again, Express Pass, I don't want to overstate the power of that, but it in this kind of season, it gives all three teams a chance. I don't know. The odds of them being the final three isn't very high. There are other good teams, but the odds of two of them making it, pretty high, I think.
Yeah, I think we're definitely, of those three teams, we're definitely looking at like two of the final three for sure. And, you know, I am not necessarily as good at math as anybody that had to count a bunch of cherries this episode, but I think that's all but certain.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, again, this first task, they kind of arrive in that order. But again, this task was more most teams didn't gain or lose a ton. I mean, now even no one passed. You can't really pass anyone. But we did see, and the reason we're kind of focusing on that is then we come upon what, the first roadblock clue I should mention, who's up first? You know, a little lazy, but I get where they're going with the second one. Who has no choice but to do this roadblock?
That's my favorite roadblock. We were talking about this last time, Dan. I love it when the roadblock clue doesn't even pretend to be anything other than what it is. It's like, yep, you didn't do that one, so now you got to do this one.
Yeah, there's no like, who's going to, I don't even know. So who's going to, who likes to, see, everything I do has something to do with like a hole. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go there. That's not good. Like shooting.
Yeah, I've got something worse, Dan.
Okay. Oh, no.
Like, who's biathlon curious?
Oh, that's good though. That actually is more clever than like who wants to shoot the hole or oh my god. There's just so many bad ways to go there. Regardless, as we continue, this is very familiar to another task, and this was brought up by John, but I thought of it too while watching it, where we have a case here where they are doing cross-country skiing at a place that Jesse knows very well, since he said he was there skiing last month. Second time that has happened on this race so far. That cross-country skiing and shooting, which is biathlon, it's a winter Olympic sport, but uses a variety of skills, but kind of similar to a biking challenge, I believe, from season 2, where the mother and son team were eliminated at that point and was very hard and tiring, where this actually looks slightly easier than that one, but still pretty challenging.
Yeah, the loop was 300 meters. That's not terribly far to ski. And yeah, cross-country skiing is a great workout, but it's not, you know, that's like less than a quarter of a mile. I think, again, like don't count on me to count cherries and don't count on me to do math, but yeah, 300 meters, not super duper far. But I do like the aspect of it where you can knock out part of it and then you got to go back and like do the other part again. I think those are fun challenges to watch, especially because almost nobody can get it on the first try. And when somebody gets very close on the first try, that's very exciting.
I mean, Brandon got out three of them and then spent like 15 more laps to get the last two, which was kind of amazing.
Yeah. And then it's like diminishing returns too, because you get tired, and the more tired you are, the more, you know, the harder it is to focus. And I think it makes for good television when somebody really gets wrecked by it. And like you rightly pointed out, Dan, this allowed for a lot of switching up in the order. But how great was it? We got, you know, Amazing Race Canada is frequently giving us like a detour, a roadblock, and three route markers. But this one, it's like we are fully going to do two roadblocks and a detour in 1 hour. It's like we sometimes don't even get that much in a finale of a U.S. season. It's fantastic. I liked this cadence. I think I could go for this cadence in every episode. Like, everybody has to do a roadblock every episode. I think that's fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have the two roadblocks, the second one being much harder. I mean, the people that got to do, you know, just got to be the human kite, as Kathy called it, and just fly across, they were the winners in this way because they got to do the easy roadblock. But I mean, unless you were like really afraid of heights, but even that's not like skydiving or something. But yeah, you have two and then a detour and then a route info, which actually turned out to be very important. It was not. So you have four tasks, one that actually plays a role in the elimination and two in the middle that are pretty hard with one of the detours in this. So, I mean, it was really cool to see. I like the way they did it. And I like the way that, you know, you kind of the balance of it. I mean, technically the last one ended up being, but you kind of had like pretty easy, very hard. And then assuming you could do math and count, but I mean, again, not picking on the teams. I know it was stressful. The last one is a little easier, but by then everyone's so tired that becomes trickier too.
Yeah. And think of all the ways you can mess with people. If everybody knows they have to do a roadblock in every leg, like think about front loading that leg with a really, really hard roadblock. And then the other person thinking, well, OK, I will take the easy one, and then having the next one be even harder. Or, you know, give somebody a roadblock clue that suggests it's going to be something very scary, and then give them something really easy, like have them make pie or something. And then the next one is super hard and the other person has to do the super hard one. I think the possibilities are endless, and the strategy would kind of get kicked up a notch because people would have to be thinking about like, who do we want to be the first out of the gate and who's bad in cleanup? I think there's a lot of possibility here, and I want to see more of this.
Well, yeah. What about if you like had a food challenge that seemed hard? And you said, well, this person does better with eating. And then the next one, you had to eat something even harder or something. Now, that might lead to a lot of puking and stuff, however. But I mean, that idea of just like, oh, you know, something that I am more skilled in this.
Yep.
Well, no, you're not.
Roadblock clue. Who's ready to eat 5 pancakes? Oh, well, that's obviously that's you, Dan, because I don't want to do the eating. And then I open mine and it says, who's ready to eat 10 pancakes? Totally.
That's great. That's gold right there. That's gold. Like, you know, and even pancakes, too. You got to be careful with the situation where if one person is like vegan or something, well, we ran into that in Australia. I don't know why I have to reference Australia season, but it was so long. I mean, they basically did everything, you know, but essentially with this, it's like, I have to point out too, with the skiing, how like, cause I am not a skier. I feel like I just spend this whole podcast talking about things I'm not, but I'm not really a skier.
Well, that's Frank why out. I'm here, Dan, because I've actually done these things.
So we'd make an okay team where it'd be like, okay, I'll do the skiing. And then it's like, now you must ski a harder course. I'm like, no, I can't.
Now you have to ski and shoot.
Which I've also never done. I mean, I'm like, of course, a lot of people hadn't here. I should point out a couple things. Franca, really terrible skier, but good shooter, at least from what we could see. I also want to point out Julie talking about how she went to college and got in a law enforcement program and had a firearm certification. And I'm like, man, she just keeps getting more interesting. Like, you know, and the fact that she did do very well, it's just, I mean, it's interesting when you have things that kind of bring out, it's like, huh, wow, you know, very, you know, famous and, you know, pretty famous, very talented singer, also has this other skill that she's also very good at. I mean, just very interesting. Some of the things in this one.
Well, and that's what a good Amazing Race season does is it pulls out these secret skills that you possibly didn't think people had. And it's another reason biathlon is such a great Amazing Race task, because you might be a really good skier and a terrible shot, or you might be an okay skier and a really good shot, and you can move ahead that way. It called upon like two kind of not adjacent skill sets, and it made, you know, nobody was amazing at both, you know.
Yeah, I was wondering about Cedric and Cassie both. It started to snow harder, or there seemed to be more snow. And Cassie and Cedric, neither one could really ski. And Cedric also couldn't really shoot. And I was just like, is this going to be one of those situations where he just never... But they both hung in there. She actually shot pretty well, even though she said she never shot a gun. But just, again, getting them in the situation where it's like, I mean, I'm not saying the gun shooting as much, but just doing things they've never done. And seeming to still enjoy it, despite it being looking a little difficult, was really smart.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun. And it's fun to see people with like large athletic equipment, you know, to put on skis when you're not a skier and have to figure out how to navigate it. Like cross-country skiing is one of those things, Dan, where I feel like the learning curve is pretty steep. Like you can... It's a good task in that regard, because you can put the skis on and figure out how everything fits together in, you know, 30 minutes. You can get yourself moving pretty easily. So it's also something that clearly takes a lifetime to master, because you could tell like who had done it a lot. And I was really, really waiting for a 5-hole on this one. But again, just getting a task that you do for a living is not a 5-hole. And the chances of Jesse screwing up a cross country skiing task were very slim. And as soon as he got on the skis, you could tell like, oh, we're not getting our 5-hole.
Yeah. He seemed very comfortable. Like, you know, it's like he's walking, and I saw, because we saw Brendan, who looked like a very good skier, and Jesse's just like, yep, there I go. But the thing is with this task, if he had messed up the shooting, it would not be a 5-hole. The only way this could be a 5-hole is if somehow he like fell down and like yep. couldn't ski or like did something, because that would be a 5-hole then, because he technically failed at the cross country skiing, or, you know, just like went off the course, but not the shooting. That's totally separate.
And this is also like you can't call unfair either, because he did have to do the shooting. It wasn't just a straight ski around this loop kind of situation. So he definitely was like, they were calling on skills that he wasn't necessarily training for, you know, 60 hours a week, every single week of the year. So it is a terrible thing to say, especially like this is a team that I chose very high in the draft and I'm rooting for them pretty hard. I still kind of wanted to see him fall down on his skis.
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah, they would have definitely shown it, because, you know, that the show would enjoy doing that. But again, it's like, he's not, I mean, maybe he probably is actually your typical athlete. He's not the typical athlete I've often seen on reality shows, who's like really like, I'm awesome. I'm, you know, like Scott Pollard or something. I played in the NBA and I was so great. Jesse just is like, yeah, I did that. You know, it was, yeah, let's go. You know, it's, and it doesn't mean he's boring. I actually kind of find it really endearing the way that no matter what happens, he's just like, yeah, I did that last time. This is going to be great. You know, I hope we get first. And, you know, but it's just, he's got that quiet confidence that is really good to do well on this show. I mean, in terms of placement, I'm not just saying in terms of big characters, they, you know, but just very solid at what he's doing.
I hope we get first place. I want that Marshall's gift card. I love Marshall's.
I wanted Brendan O'Connor to get it just so they could like keep adding to the Marshall's total and be like, we have $8,000 now. Or cause they got five the first week. Then I think like two. And then it's like, wow, they are really getting a lot of Marshall's. These teams though, I mean, I don't know if they just all like invade a Marshall's and just like buy out everything in the store at this point. It's out of control, Jess.
They're going to do a Toys R Us super toy run in the Marshall's.
They're like, we don't want that. No, that rack doesn't look good. I mean, there are good things. I'm not saying I've spent so little time in a Marshall's, but I don't know. It makes me laugh almost every time I think about how much money they're getting at Marshall's.
Me too. Especially like if I had $8,000 to spend at Marshall's, there is a Marshall's like you could practically see it from my apartment. And I think it would probably be months before I managed to make it in there, because every time you go in there, you have to wait in line for 45 minutes to buy anything. And that's if you find something you like. Is it really going to be something you like enough to wait in line that long? And I don't think you can like pull your Amazing Race Canada cachet and jump the line there. Like that would be a prize. That would be a leg prize. Like you get this $2,500 Marshall's gift card and a free pass to skip the line at Marshall's. Now you're talking prizes. That's like free. That's free gas for life levels.
Disney Fast Pass kind of thing. It's like, oh, I get to do this. Yeah, because I think about it, it's kind of like when you get like a gift card to like a restaurant and you're like, well, it's 30 minutes away. And I don't know if it's that seems really, and it just sits in a drawer for a while. Now, granted, I'm not talking about $5,000 to a restaurant or free subs for a year or anything. I'm talking about like $20, but this is, you know, wow, a lot of Marshall's. But I know we are getting sidetracked, Jess.
We can't talk about this for one more minute because you just reminded me. So several years ago for our wedding, we got a gift card to a specialty store in New York that sells like glassware and dishes and cool stuff. And we, at the time, it was like, we have 9 million pint glasses. We do not need any more glassware. What are we going to do with this gift card? We're going to sit on it until we need it. And so last weekend, we finally hit the point where we needed it. And do you think I could find that damn thing? I could not. I ended up having to spend actual money in the store, and that gift card's still floating around out there somewhere.
That's what they do. That's how it works. That's the gift card racket. You never actually find them.
Yeah. But let's get back to talking about Amazing Race Canada. But before we dive into the lawn bowling / fruit pie making of it all, let's stop down to take a little break and hear from our sponsors. And then when we come back, we're going to take a detour.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
And we're back. We're going to be, we took a detour and now we're going to talk the detour, I guess, Dan. That was such a smooth transition. I feel like, you know, that's going to be my five hole when I go on Amazing Race.
Great job. You know, balling or palming. I don't know what we did. not the best two detour.
Oh, but it's so Canadian. You have you have an English word and a French word. That's so Canadian.
Yeah, and I spelled them both incorrectly in my notes and then had to respell them, you know, of course, like I do. But I mean, because, you know, I didn't use the ball in with the apostrophe.
Yeah.
I put IN, so that was wrong. And,
it's apostrophe.
And I put palm in like it was a hand. Not correct. But regardless, Jess, we have the Vernon Lawn Bowling Club, my new favorite club, I think. You can go there and compete against some. These are not 12-year-olds who can play soccer that are easy to score goals off of. This is hard stuff. Or you can go make apple pies in a task that the show did not seem very interested in showing, I have to say, Jess. You know, what should people choose?
Well, this is a hard choice, Dan, not because there's a, you know, no logical right or wrong answer, because there is a very clear logical right answer on this. It's very clearly you have to do the pies, because it's basically follow a list of instructions. And those pies were not perfectly formed apple pies, as John Montgomery said you had to do to complete the task. Like those were OK pies. Like you did OK. You made pies. There was no finesse to it. There was no technique to it. I think the lawn bowling, though, it looked a lot harder, but it looked a lot more fun. Like, those people know how to party, man. That was a much, much more fun looking task.
You know what I'm curious about? I'm curious about if the pies were further away, because it did seem much easier. And the teams that did it, both, especially Beverly and Veronica, but also Jill and Kathy, both did move up a bit in the standings, but not as much as you would have thought, given, I mean, the scores in the lawn bowling was like 33-4 and stuff. And granted, the rounds don't take that long, but I'm curious. I was doing some quick, you know, checking, but again, I don't have in front of me every distance, but I'm looking at, I see where the Vernon Lawn Bowling Club is. I'm curious just to see how far Davis and Orchards is from that. Let me see.
It is super far. It's hella far. It's like a full mile, or I guess it's probably 3 or 4 kilometers from the city center. Where were they coming from? They were coming from the Sovereign Lake Nordic Center. So I'm going to plug that in.
Let me check that out. Yeah. I mean, this is important. I feel like this is something that doesn't get talked as much as it should in terms of, okay. Oh, wow. That's a trek.
I mean, at that point, it really doesn't make a difference.
No, because you're going 26 kilometers from the Nordic Club to Davis and Orchards. So then you're going another mile or two. So they are both pretty close. It's really, the Orchards look a little further away, like you're going past it. But again, you know, we don't probably need to go through all of it. But granted, given the scope of things, it was a couple minutes. It wasn't that much.
Yeah, I don't think that makes that much difference now that I'm looking at it. But, you know, every little bit helps. And especially, like, these are not, there's not a huge amount of time separating the teams. So maybe you do just kind of want to take every possible opportunity. But on the other hand, that apple task was so much easier than the lawn bowling that I feel like, they factored that in. They factored in the commute and they said, we will cut these people a break if they go that extra mile.
Right. And I mean, because unless there was something like, I mean, I think they would have made a bigger deal if the apples, if they had any challenges doing it. Because again, John announces it and I'm like, That could be tricky. Sometimes baking tasks are much harder than they look. We've seen plenty on this show and other versions of The Amazing Race. This was not one of those cases. Like I was one of those things where they, all we really saw, well, they showed up, Beverly and Veronica were a little confused about the tools. And then Julie was really pumped. So this is where they made their move. And then we saw both teams get the clues. And that was like, yeah, which is fine. I'm not sure I wanted to watch 10 minutes of that, but it's just interesting to show. I mean, I think it's because they had a lot of gold with some of the friends at the bowling club were a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially Heather, man, she can trash talk.
Like Michael Jordan. Good reference there, Cedric. We're really, really doing the new references. But and then also, you know, right when we get there, we have Jesse and Marika, who, you know, Rob and Betty, they were killers. Killers at the lawn bowling. I joined the teams too, because the teams, you know, I mean, the teams were getting a little frustrated, but they were also having some fun. Like you mentioned the trash talking at that point, Cedric and Deshaun are in last place and he's still kind of making jokes and stuff. And I think, I enjoy when the teams realize this is kind of a silly task, but also, you know, it's pretty fun overall.
Yeah. And I looked this up, Dan, because I was curious. I wanted to know the gameplay of it looked a lot like bocce, but lawn bowling and bocce are similar sports, but completely like different set of rules, different equipment. And the big difference that I found out, and this makes me really want to go lawn bowling because this sounds absolutely wild. A bocce ball is perfectly round, whereas a lawn bowling ball is slightly flat on one of the sides so that it rolls all wonky. And that seems to me like that's got to be a lot more fun than just like trying to roll the ball to the exact right spot.
Right. This is not like the equivalent of like shuffleboard, but you're rolling it where you're just trying to get it to stop. Then you saw teams do that where the ball would all of a sudden at the very end would just go a different direction. And the team's like, what? But then teams did reference the fact, I think it was Brendan O'Connor who referenced it, because they got out of there first, but then got lost. But they referenced the fact that you had to kind of, you know, curve it sideways or account for one side would move a certain way because the ball was that way. And you kind of had to account for that. You couldn't just throw it straight on and expect it to go the way you thought it would.
Yeah. And I love that. That's super fun. And I can definitely see the appeal of when you're faced with two tasks, it's really hard not to pick the one that's going to be a better, you know, that's going to be a better time. Even if you know you might save a couple of minutes, you know, doing some kitchen drudgery. And I say this as somebody that loves to bake. That apple pie task looked like a task that they put in there because they knew they needed an additional task. Or it was like somebody at the orchard, they owed that person a favor and they needed to go shoot over there. Or they paid promotional consideration or something, because it looked like, you know, it looked like I was doing kitchen work, you know?
Yeah. At first I thought it seemed like it might be more of like a sponsorship task, but they didn't spend it. He mentioned Davis and Orchards, but he didn't spend enough time on it. Well, granted, they still might have made some sort of deal to go there. But he didn't spend time, like, you know, when they did like the camping one and then like John's like, look at all this amazing equipment from blah, 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 and all that. This wasn't on that level, you know, or like Subway or anything. But it did seem like, I think it's also a case where if more teams had gone there, if there had been more drama, we would have seen more. But because the two teams that went there were very competent and they each gained like a place or something, but there wasn't a dramatic impact on the show and on what happened. So the show a little bit, they wanted to show that, but they also wanted to spend some time in the final task, which obviously played a much bigger role in what happened, especially with really just with the final few teams. More math, Jess. I mean, Amazing Race Canada loves math.
One of the things I treasure about Amazing Race Canada is that when they are planning their race course, they think about not just what is going to make good television, but what is going to make a good race. What is going to keep this competitive and what is going to call upon like the widest variety of skill sets. And so as a result, we get a lot more math. And Amazing Race US, I think for a variety of reasons, we will never see math on this level. But I was very excited to see the return. Like, this is not even the first math task this season. And
no.
And it was just, it tripped people up exactly the right amount, if you ask me. But it wasn't even, it didn't end up being the math's fault either, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, this wasn't a case where you had a team that just, because really what got, what we saw with multiple teams, like what got Julian Cathy in trouble was they kept counting the wrong number of trees, where they, you know, they had 568, and then they had, they even at one point had, were off by one tree and had 549 and everything. So, and I know, I'm sure they were getting tired and it's hard to concentrate because counting 548 trees, it's really easy to make a mistake. But that was really the X factor. It's kind of like, because we've had ones in the past where you have to count things and they have a high number and stuff. But again, taking it, like we talked about this with like biathlon or whatever else, taking that extra step where you say, okay, you can count all this, and okay, counting, maybe teams can run fast, they have a good system. But then it should be, if you get the right number, you can multiply it. But we saw again with Brendan Zaccotta, where he, right after he talked about how he teaches middle school math, they counted the right number of trees and then said it was like 2,000. It's like, No. And he did reference why he made a mistake. But again, that second thing means there's multiple ways they can mess up. But I mean, most of the teams finish close. But again, we talk about a team like Fernella or even Jesse and Marika that are very deliberate, that might be strong, but are very like, we are doing this plan. Here's what we'll do. You take this. Jesse and Marika do this on a lot. We've seen Fernella do this, where they work together well and they split it up and they say, we're going to move slower, but then we're not going to have to do it twice, where other teams are like, we're going to run faster, we're going to go. And the Maze Race Canada really rewards teams, it sounds weird, that move slow, more than the U.S. season, I think.
Yeah, it's a tortoise and hare situation where, you know, measure twice, cut once. I'm sure there are many other applicable proverbs here. But yeah, it seems like Amazing Race U.S. would just make you count the trees. You wouldn't have to calculate any cherries. You would just count your trees and move on. But this was required you to do a little bit of extra thinking. And the thing I wondered, Dan, after I was looking at it, like the trees are kind of on a grid. I think the first thing I would try if I'm trying to cut corners is I would try to count how many trees wide is this area and how many trees long is this area and multiply it and see if I get the right answer that way, because that's a lot easier than individually counting trees. And if that works, then great. And if not, you know, I've only wasted a couple of minutes and I can go in and count them manually. I saw that Jesse and Marika were each counting separately and then checking against each other's answers, which I think also, like, that points to that being deliberate about it. And the fact that they both got the same answer means they knew they were probably right about that. And I think that's also the way to go. Like, you and your partner, like, don't split it up. You each count on your own and then make sure you both came to the same answer before you start doing the next step.
Yeah. And this is another case too, where they're not going to tell you, I mean, I don't know why they would, but they're not going to tell you what's wrong. So you have this case where once you miss and start missing repeatedly, then it's like, wait, is our count wrong? Is our math wrong? Nope. Our math's right. Okay. Let's do our count again. And I almost feel like it's like a spiral thing where if you get it on the first try, or, you know, your math is wrong, but you got the right count, you're in good shape. But once you miss a few times, the odds are much higher you're going to miss a lot more times because you start to get stressed. And then also, it's just like we saw with the goats, where it's like some teams just rock through it. And then some of the teams that struggled, it was almost like overwhelming. And that had the other factor of the goats. The trees were not running away from the teams, thankfully. That would be a great test, though, if the trees were running away from the teams. But
this is like some kind of like in-person Quidditch thing where it's like they have
like the end in Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
we could go either way with that, I think. But
it's like one of the trees is actually a human in a suit.
And after a while he just steps away and then it's like, now we have 547. And then he comes back. It's like, wait, what? What's happening here? Now they wouldn't be that diabolical to the teams, I guess.
No, there's messing with teams and then there's messing with teams.
So should we talk about I guess the first thing is Cedric and Tashawn's strategy, which I thought was interesting.
Well, it's a very Amazing Race Canada strategy to do. And I think, yeah, I think we got to get into it, Dan. I think this is the first of a couple of really big topics that, you know, we managed to waste 41 minutes talking about the entire rest of this episode, when really, I think the main event is right here. The first instance this season of a team deliberately doing something they know is against the rules and assuming that the penalty is going to be the quicker route. And there's so many kinds of wrong about this, Dan, but I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on this situation.
You know, this is even different to me. Like, we've seen in the past where, oh, they have to do the polo hockey in the water and they just like, we can't do this. We're cold, we're tired, whatever. Or a team just like is like, this is too hard. I don't want to dig in the sand or whatever. This is different. This is weird. This is like a team basically like, I don't know how to even, I was trying to wrap my brain around it because again, I look at them and you could even see they just kind of logically were like, yeah, we know we're going to get a penalty. We're just going to look at this other answers. And part of me is like, should that be allowed? Even, I mean, should that, it's not even a penalty situation. Should that just be like, no, that is not, why are the boards still there, Jess? I don't even understand. It's like it's like the show. I'm not talking like they have some crazy intentions, but they almost, by leaving the boards there, created this situation by doing it. It would never have happened if there were no boards left there. I don't understand why the boards were there.
Well, Dan, we also have to look back, you know, because there's a long and storied history of Amazing Race Canada doing math, we got to look back to last season. And I know it was a long time ago at this point, but remember Dave and Arena looking at other people's boards? This rule has to be in place because of that specifically. And it wasn't even a situation where you might try to do it to save yourself some time. Like, they knew they were going to be breaking the rules and taking a penalty for looking at the boards. Like, it must have specifically said on their list of instructions, if you look at other people's gear, you are going to get a penalty, because they were very knowing about all of this. And I think it's set up in such a way that I think the show was just like daring people. They were like, yeah, F around and find out, Amazing Race Canada contestants. They're very clear about, like, don't look at other people's stuff. But the remedy, if you really don't want people to look at other people's stuff, the remedy is just not to have other people's stuff right there, right?
Right. Yeah. That's what I was thinking more about. It's like, I know I'm sure they did that, because even you could tell it was surprising when Julie and Kathy got there, but still, the teams all, I'm sure it was in bold letters, like, don't do that. And it wasn't, I don't think it's even look, don't touch the other boards. Like, they don't even want it to be like, oh, you know, I mean, I'm sure, like, don't, if you grab them with your hand, you will get a penalty. But also, if they really didn't want teams to do this, I think the show probably thought 2 hours was enough where teams would not survive. And really, they should not have survived. But the fact that it was there, this has happened in the past where I'm like, the show doesn't encourage people to take penalties, but they don't really hate it. They kind of like it. It's not discouraged. The show kind of likes it, I think.
Yeah, they do like it in a way that, you know, it doesn't fly down south here. But they put that situation there and they put it in the back of your mind just to see, like, if somebody wants to give it a shot. But the thing that also, I don't necessarily, I think it is a little unusual for Cedric and Tashawn and the way that they handled this, in that it wasn't a straight quitting of a task so much as a knowingly violating the very spirit of the task in a way that they knew was wrong. But then I don't understand how you accidentally do this. Like, how did that happen? That was the part, like, my jaw did literally drop when I saw this happen. And especially the way they edited this, it was a big fake out. Like, this was like, you know, Korean TV series, the genius level fake outs, where it's like, we're going to go back and show you what actually happened while we play Extreme Ways by Moby in the background. That was going on here. It was genuinely shocking. Like, I was just waiting for like Julie and Kathy to roll up on the mat and Cedric and Tashawn to get eliminated because, you know, they effed around and found out. But then, oh no, surprise. There was an accidental touching of the slates, and there is a penalty assessed to this team as well. That was genuinely shocking to me. I did not expect that, and I didn't see it coming.
Me neither. And the weird thing is yeah, it's like they showed it. I think it even, like, I went back and watched it, that you did see her do it very, it was like a blink and you miss it kind of thing in the real edit. But then I went back and showed it again, but it did. I didn't understand it because it's like, it did look like she looked at the boards, but she wasn't the one doing the math. Like, Kathy had the board and was writing stuff down, and you see Julie look at a couple other boards, but then for her to be like, oh, I must have done it. Like, because she didn't just bump it with her hand. You see her pick one up and look at it, but then we don't see anything of her going to Kathy, hey, wait, it's this, or hey, it's this. So I don't get the impression that they gained anything by it. But they're, I mean, who knows? Maybe she even mentioned this is the most stressful thing like she's ever done, even though it seemed like it was a good experience, but she was really stressed by it. So who knows? Maybe she doesn't even remember the fact that she did it because they were just so frantic. But I don't understand, like, there's nothing in the task that requires you to grab any items except for what you're holding. So it's very baffling to me. And I agree, even the way they showed Cedric and Tashawn be like, you could tell that they were regretting it because they were like, we're not going to, when they got there and actually kind of hit them 2 hours, they're not going to take 2 hours. We're toast. And the edit just pushed that. And even afterwards, they seemed more like, I don't know if they were embarrassed by it as they thought about it more or just like couldn't believe they survived. But it would, even their vibe was a little different. It was nothing like Dave and Arena, even that other time when they took the penalty and then survived. And they were like so arrogant about it. This wasn't the case at all. They almost seemed like, what did we do? Like, they couldn't believe they did it in a way, but it seemed very logical when they did it.
The crazy thing is that it's 2 hours for the penalty because, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, wouldn't 2 hours be the penalty you took if you quit this task? Like, if you like literally doing nothing gets you the same penalty as doing that.
Yeah, 2 hours. Root infos, from what I've seen in Canada, are always 2 hours. And then I think it's 4 for the other task is usually how it works. But usually the ones we see people don't do is the root infos for some reason. And those are typically 2 hours. And I think there has been some variance based on the task. But I think it would be the same if they walked up and they were just like, I don't know how to count, and just left. Or, you know, whatever. I'm not saying them in particular. But just in general, somebody was like, that's too much running. Or, some, you know, let's say, better example, someone hurt their ankle and they can't walk or something. And so they are like, we can't do this. We're just taking the penalty. We're going to move on. And they would still probably only get 2 hours. I don't think what they did, it made any difference. So really they didn't even need to get the answer. They could have just been like, we're out. We think Julie Cathy will never get it. But I assume they knew they were getting a 2 hour penalty. They didn't know. It was just, maybe the show just said, you will get a penalty. And they didn't know in the clues, and maybe then when they got 2 hours, they realized how severe it was. I don't know. I'm just speculating at this point.
Yeah, I would guess that if you know that it is a 2 hour penalty for quitting one of these tasks, you would assume that giving the task the old college try and then breaking a rule is not going to give you the same penalty as if you straight out quit the task. Maybe that was the surprise. Maybe it was like, oh, well, I thought 2 hours was for if I just didn't do anything, but I did something, like I passed the task, I got the answer, that's got to count for something. And it turns out it counts for absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because even at the end, you know, Tashawn was like, we learned shortcuts aren't the way to win. Maybe they thought the penalty was going to be 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then because they look shell-shocked. Like, they knew they were getting a penalty, but when John actually told them it's 2 hours, they both looked like, oh man, we just lost the race. They had that look in their eye. They didn't say it, but they had the look in the eye like, we just blew it. And if they knew that probably, I mean, unless they thought they weren't team number 6, like, but I think there were many times during the leg where they said, we're last. we're second last, whatever. So you would think they would think they were that far. But the only other thing I think is they thought there were more teams they didn't see. But the most likely scenario is that they thought that it was going to be a less severe penalty. But still, the show, I don't think the show probably does not want to encourage people just to straight up cheat. I mean, they may like the taking the penalty and the strategy. And again, I'm not trying to get on my high horse about Deshaun Cedric. I mean, they made a calculus and it almost paid off for them. Well, actually, it did pay off for them. I should restate. They're still the show.
100% paid off.
Yeah, but it almost paid off even without. And according to the timer, it was like 19 minutes. It almost paid off straight up, but it paid off anyway. Though, really, if they had just probably done the task, I think they would have finished in time. But again, then there's a weird thing of if both teams are there, how does that change how everyone acts? And would Julie ever grab? You know, there's a lot of other alternate timeline things. So really, but looking at what they did, it's the whole thing was so strange. And like you said, the editing, that I'm still kind of like reminding myself, oh yeah, Cedric and Deshaun didn't get eliminated, even though I watched it and I know they didn't. It still kind of feels like they did.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those situations where we look back on it and we're going to think that's where they went out. And, you know, we have the opportunity, like a few years down the road, we interview them. We're going to be asking them about this and not about however other way they end up going out if they don't win it. You know, this is their Waterloo, regardless of how they actually end up going out. And it is funny, Dan, I think the show really is making a statement there about doing something that is explicitly against the rules versus, you know, it's better to do nothing at all than to do something that we explicitly told you not to do. And I think that is a very interesting observation, because you really could quit the task and they don't seem to care about that. In fact, they kind of seem to like it up there, but it's a different thing. It's not honorable to actively cheat.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder too, and this is not, but just the fact we haven't really seen references at all to Sean, except for in the premiere that he was on Big Brother. And from what I've heard, he seemed like, you know, a good player and was not super sneaky or whatever, but I know he is known, going back to Mike Bloom's reference, for being a move where he, like, you know, betrayed someone, everything. And I'm not talking personality. I'm just saying, his mind, knowing kind of the strategy of going through Big Brother and everything, it might make him slightly more likely to think over doing something like this, just because, you know, being on a reality show, your brain may, like, you know, when Rob mm-hmm. Mariano went on Amazing Race and was just like, you know, I'm going to use this penalty in the meat block. And, or, you know, it's going to work out. I know how to do it. His brain works differently. And I don't know if Deshaun, if that's the case at all, that caused them maybe to be more willing. I would say that though, but a lot of people have taken penalties. This one just felt a little different.
Yeah. This does feel like a situation where I think Rob Mariano would have also pondered doing this exact thing. And it is like, I think there is a certain type of person who goes on reality TV with that kind of scheming mind, and they think about it that way. But I think Sean may be that person, but I think he's also trying not to be that person, because I think he immediately regrets the decision.
Yes. He's not winking at the camera like, you know, I just brought Survivor strategy to Amazing Race, or I'm going to pay the bus driver not to open the back door. And he's not doing these things, which some of the things Rob was doing were for TV. I mean, they were like, this is going to be good TV. This is going to be funny to him, not the meat block. I'm talking some of the other ones. I don't see that at all with Deshaun, and has not. If I didn't know he was on Big Brother or he was on another reality show, I'd be like, it's a father-son team. They seem like nice dudes. They have a good relationship, you know, which they are, all those things. The only reason I think about it is just in terms of when you get to this point and the strategy they used. It's interesting. That's, you know.
Yeah, I honestly forget it most of the time, too. And I think that's down to only half of the team has been on another reality show. And I like that so much better than when it's like a dating couple who met and had a showmance on Big Brother. I find a team like this so much more rootable for some reason.
Well, they have so much more. I mean, obviously being a father. Yeah, you have a couple that met, or, you know, Keith and Whitney or something that. Ugh. Oh, sorry. I brought them up. But I don't think they're listening. But you have a team some teams maybe haven't been, they've been dating for a little while or whatever, but most of what they have in common is their time on the reality show and then the 6 months or year after, where these two, they have a whole lifetime and their relationship has nothing to do with him being on Big Brother. And more power to them. I really enjoy watching them. And that's why another reason why I saw this and was like, oh, I didn't expect any of this, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to enjoy watching the future. This is a reality show. It's a game show. They have rules. They were penalized according to the rules. I'm not going to get on any high horse about what they did is something. It's just, you have to think it through when you think about the thought process that went into that when they decided to do it.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's F around to find out, and they effed around, they found out. And yes. They were very, very, very lucky. In fact, we got a question about that. Actually, I'm going to save it for questions because I do want to talk about the role that luck played in this week, because I think it's very interesting. But I think there's one more point that we need to get into before we start tackling questions, Dan. And that is, again, we thought we were getting faked out by the end of the episode. No, we are getting even more faked out in the next time on The Amazing Race Canada, because it's like, normal, 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 normal. Oh, by the way, we're also bringing back all of the teams that we kicked out for COVID earlier.
Wow. That's all I can say. And again, the wording again was a little suspect, but now to see it actually where they showed it in the preview, and they were a little clearer this time because last time they didn't show in the preview that Cassie and Jameek were coming back. They just showed Julie and Kathy. This time they make it clear. This is a moment when John stops the teams. The other three teams run in, and there's a really curious shot of some sort of what looks like it's like a logo, but it might be some sort of pass or something. Here's my thought, Jess. I think they're going to do some sort of competition, these three teams.
Ah, battle back.
I don't think we're getting all of them. Now, granted, it could be like the most recent season of Australian Survivor, Blood versus Water, where they did this extended thing where four teams came back. And three of them got back in, and I was like, this is the most time I've ever wasted in my life watching for one team to get eliminated. I don't think that'll be the case here, and there was no COVID with that. But with this one, I don't know. I just feel like bringing them all three in, and all of a sudden we're back to nine teams again. It's everyone but Julie and Kathy. Seems weird to me, Jess. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. It doesn't seem like, unless three other teams got COVID and had to drop out, and so we're just like swapping in these three teams for those three teams, and it's like, you're going to go sit in the quarantine bubble until we need you back. But even then, we have to start cutting teams. We have to start going down in numbers, because at the end, there can only be one winner. We can't all be racing in the final leg.
Yeah, because if they all join, let's say we go back to nine, and yes, then we lose another team. We've gone through six episodes and we've lost two teams. And let's assume there's elimination. So my thought is there's some sort of, I mean, there's kind of two elements to this. One is the logistics of how they're going to come back in. Two is, you know, what, like, how do you even, like, at some point, and we got a question about this, which I think is good to bring up. Like John Rumsey basically is a comment, but he's like, with the on again, off again cast this season, I'm not sure how I feel about the winner. And they said, I'm surprised they didn't just shelve two episodes now, but it's more about like a race that's a competition. And I know COVID changes it and everything, but as you get further along, is there a point where you just say, okay, everyone who's out just has to be out?
Yeah. I think this is such a curious choice to get people back in. The only thing that could excuse it potentially is if they're like, if it is completely the fault of the show, if they took these people out erroneously, they're like, oh yeah, our bad. You didn't really test positive for COVID. You could all come back. Like, opening themselves up to a lawsuit if they don't do it. Like, that would make some sense. But otherwise, it's like, at a certain point, you got to just say, yeah, you had some bad luck. This is akin to you not being able to do math, or you touching a thing and not realizing it. You're out for good now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because part of me is like, I like these teams. I think it's cool that I get to see them again. Like, as a viewer, just thinking of it in terms of, I think it's great Catherine and Craig are back. You know, the other teams seem to be cool people. So there's a part of me that's like, this is fine. But then there's another part of me that's like, yeah, but what about the teams that just keep, like, you know, and again, I don't want to get too, you know, I know things are weird just with the pandemic and everything, but the teams that have gone straight through, done well for six episodes, and now are like, they got to skip some. But I don't know. I'm guessing this is a situation where when the teams had to be removed, the show sat down with everyone and were like, okay, we're going to put them in quarantine. If things seem okay, they may come back or something. The teams have to be aware, just if not, I mean, I don't know. Or even maybe they had specific things in writing before the show started that if something like that happened, they may come back. I don't know behind the scenes how it works. It's just interesting to see it on a show that this isn't Australian Survivor or even Australian Amazing Race, which brought in stowaway teams. And I always wondered what would happen there if those teams made the end and how it would feel if they won. But that's even different because that was more like those are show moves in order to have a longer season and more episodes. This is something unexplained and kind of unprecedented.
Yeah. Well, it is an interesting situation in a way that the Australian one was not, because Australia did bake this into the premise from day one, where it's like people didn't seem to be blindsided by the fact that, like, oh, if you win certain legs, then you don't have to run the next leg and things like that. So this feels a little bit more loosey-goosey. And I think they must have gone over like every possible situation and what they would do in those situations with people. Like, they must have been briefed on this before they got out there. And I'm going to be really interested to know. I hope I get the chance to interview Phil ahead of the next season of Amazing Race US, because that is a question I'm going to ask him. Like, how much of the contingency plans, how many contingency plans did you have? How did you broach this with the contestants? Like, how much did they know about what might possibly befall them if there's a COVID case? I'm curious about the behind the scenes of that all, especially having talked with Phil about Tough as Nails in this regard, like what they did to like create their production bubble and all of the situations that came up around that. I think from a production standpoint, this is a really tough thing. And I don't think Amazing Race Canada came into any of these decisions lightly. I would just be very curious to know what they built in for that and why and how we got there. Maybe we'll get some answers next week and maybe we won't. But it's very, very odd to me without knowing what's going on.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
And that's a good point about Tough as Nails and even what they had to do, where I know there was even a contestant that was removed and it, you know, they had to kind of work with that. And I don't know. I feel like, I mean, the being able to even have shows like this during, you know, a time when still, you know, the chances, if you're traveling all around, of getting the virus are still pretty high, is that, I mean, I know it's a privilege, even the fact that they were able to do this, and they have to, like we saw in the U.S. season that we just had, they have to make things different and whatnot. It's just, you know, the teams had to go out. I was like, man, that's a real bummer. But now they're coming back and I'm like, but I hope that this is the last time that anything like this happens with this season. I mean, for the health of the contestants, but just also, you know, the show's going to come in. Let's say they bring back one team and they have seven, or they bring back two and they have eight or whatever. Let's just have like a good run of it, because, you know, I thought this might happen, but it's still actually seeing the teams come back. It's like, I mean, I feel great for the teams, but I'm just like, what was that experience like for the teams to be in quarantine, then to come back? And I don't know. It's all almost more interesting than the show itself.
Yeah, Dan, I hope that we get a chance. This is a season where I would very much like to do a deep dive with any contestants. So I'm putting that out there. I know we got a couple of contestants that are listening in. If you want to do a deeper dive at the end of the season, CTV permitting, get at us. We want to hear more about the situation. I want to hear more about your experiences in general, but specifically as regards this, because this is wild to us. It's unprecedented for sure.
Yeah, I think that would be great. And just, you know, to learn more about that, because I know, I mean, obviously going forward, you know, we're, I mean, I would hope that this will not be as much of an issue, but currently it seems to be that in the near future, these types of issues are going to come up on reality shows, especially one that is not like a Survivor that's or Big Brother that's in one place.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I was even thinking about that, watching previews for the upcoming season of Amazing Race Australia, that is, for as far as I can tell, they're shooting it just like a pre-pandemic season. Like the footage that I saw looked very like, you know, COVID, what COVID. So this is all oddly fascinating to me, for sure.
Well, and that season is going to have some things. That's all I will say. I don't not spoil on anything with the season. A little bit I've heard. I'm there very interested in
capital T things.
That's all I will say. Yeah, I don't. And honestly, I have. That's about what I said is about 90% of what I know. So it's not, I'm not spoiled on anything, but I'm just saying that the little bit that's kind of drifted in, it's going to be interesting. We'll say that, you know, in quotes. Should we do questions?
Yeah, let's do questions, Dan. Actually, one of the first questions, we got this question several times this week from several different people, and I think it's apropos to bring this up first. People did ask, are we going to be doing a weekly recap of Amazing Race Australia? And the answer to that is probably not. At least as far as I personally am concerned, I'm not going to be able to do it weekly, because this is going to run right up into Amazing Race US, and I have other podcasting commitments that I'm not going to be able to do. But knowing how totally effed up and weird it might be, I'm definitely going to be watching. And if I have thoughts, we may have to get together, Dan, with or without some actual Australians in the room.
Yeah, and I did really enjoy last season. I know we did the preview, but then I did a few episodes with Sarah Carradine, who's, you know, in Australia. And we didn't do every week because, you know, they have a lot of episodes. But I really enjoyed jumping in and talking about that and then talking about the end. So I'm not promising anything, but, you know, we'll see. But I would love to at least record, something about this season, because I think it would be really fun.
Yeah. Agreed. I think we'll drop in at some point over the course of the race and talk about what's going on. Because, yeah, I can only imagine what wildness awaits us. So let's talk more about Amazing Race Canada. After that little digression, you know, digressions are what we're known for around here. This is an angle on BoardGate that we hadn't really considered. We have AM on Twitter says, perhaps I missed this, but did Deshaun and Cedric see Julie look at the board? To me, this is the only reason deciding to take a penalty made sense for them. Also, do teams know how long penalties will be before taking them? We talked a little bit about that last half, but I wonder, could the fact that they saw Julie look at the board, could that have factored into their decision to take the penalty?
In theory, sure. I would think, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the show could have edited around it to not show that or something, but at least based on their expressions and their reactions after they found out about the penalty and everything, I got the impression they got there and immediately kind of saw Julie and Kathy running around and just went, this isn't worth it, and did it. I don't think they hung around much at all, but again, I'm basing this on the edit and what we saw, and also their kind of shock and just look of like, oh my gosh, when everything happened. Mm-hmm. I think that, because if they knew, like if they saw them do that and thought they're going to get a penalty, they would go up and be like, well, we're golden. They wouldn't be sitting there looking out, like looking out at the beautiful wilderness or whatever, going, this is it for us, basically, is the look they had. And they would think they're good. They're, what's the problem? They're getting the same penalty as us. We got here first. We win. I didn't get that impression.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Dan. I think you're right about that.
Yeah. So, all right. So Jeffrey K asked a question, asked, is it time to radically change the format with all these teams coming in and out? Maybe no eliminations, but you earn points based on each leg's result. Top 3 point totals advance to the final leg. Reminds me a little bit of the money they're earning in the Challenge US, but that's different. They do have eliminations. And then he just said, I just realized I'm describing Beyond the Edge. I never watched Beyond the Edge because the narrator, like I would turn it on and the narrator would start and I'm like, oh no, I can't take this. This is too much. And I never got past the like host's voice. Jess, do you know anything about this? And do you see, could this work? Because I feel like points, wow, that would be tough to follow.
Well, the first thing is I literally LOL'd when I saw Jeffrey answer his own question, because that was that was very classic and very funny. I didn't really watch Beyond the Edge at all. It looked to me like a Survivor clone, and I didn't really care for any of the people that were on it. But yeah, I think this gets too far removed from what Amazing Race is. I think it's also, it's similar to Eco Challenge, I guess, where you get points for based on how fast you finish each leg, and then your points add up at the end. I think this is a different game. It's a different show if you do that. And I think part of the thing that keeps people coming back every week is finding out who's getting kicked off. Like that's true of almost every reality show. And, you know, you have like this was something that, you know, we've talked to Phil again about, not to bring up Tough as Nails and our BFF Phil Kogan every time this comes up, but he said it was really hard to come up with a concept where you could keep every person still in the competition, but keep that suspense up. And I think they did a very good job of that. But I think you do need to have something fundamental about the show change every week. And I think if you have cumulative points, you don't get that. It's like, ooh, one team got a few more points than another team. And I think especially like with teams like this, Dan, we would still like have those strata of people that have a shot at winning and people that do not. You know, I think this takes out suspense and it doesn't add any new suspense in.
Yeah, it's like there's like fantasy football or fantasy baseball is a good example, where you have like roto leagues where teams accumulate numbers, and like halfway through the season, a third or half the teams have no chance to win the league. And then they're all like, we don't care. And they stop paying attention. And not that these teams wouldn't, I assume some of these teams would still really enjoy doing the tasks and say, it's all about the journey, to quote Cedric and Deshaun's idea or their motto idea. It sounds like they just came up, but basically I think that's something that some people are having a hard time with this season. And we, you know, is that like Edward Giordano saying, we've had 5 episodes and effectively 1 elimination. I think, you know, how Rob is on US Amazing Race, where he hates the non-elimination legs. You know, people want to see people get eliminated. And I know with 10 teams, sometimes there are more non-eliminations, but the other way, like I said, even the Challenge has all kinds of goofy stuff. They still kick people out. Granted, they have like 100 people in the house, but here it's like, I think that's why, another reason why some people are having a hard time. It's like, we don't feel like we're making as much forward progress. And a lot of it is just based on factors out of the show's control.
Yeah, I think you do need that. You need this show to change week to week. You need to be building to something, and you don't build to it if everybody's just racking up points. That's my feeling of it. And maybe that's why Beyond the Edge failed. Actually, did it fail, Dan? I don't know. Maybe it didn't fail. Maybe we're on track for Beyond the Edge season 2, but I haven't heard any such thing. So I have a question here that I think this brings up a really interesting topic of discussion for us. We have a new listener, Jay, who says, how lucky was that for Tashawn and Cedric? And what are some of the luckiest moments in Amazing Race history?
Oh, this is a tough question because there's different elements of luck. Some of them are kind of like this, where it's like a team comes in and Phil, this, I'm thinking a lot about US, this seems to happen. Phil will be like, actually, you know, Jim and Tom took a cab instead of walking to the pit stop. And so you're last. There's no Jim and Tom. I don't know why I thought of that team, but you know, that idea where you see a lot of that, or the most common, you know, a team gets lost and one team comes in and they're like, what? There's a team behind us. The real winners of this. I mean, oh, and then the third factor is the teams that keep showing up for non-eliminations. That's kind of the third element where you have these teams, like even the team that I really enjoyed, the Sweet Scientists from Amazing Race 25, who were saved multiple times, or the Beekman boys, probably the luckiest to get that far, where they couldn't even do the task at one point with the swimming. But to me, I think like a team like Meredith and Gretchen from season 7, who seemed like 3 or 4 times came in and they were like, we're done, we're out. And one, there was an elimination, and two, it was just like a team got lost or a team did something weird or whatever. So I don't know. It's hard to say what the luckiest moments are, but I feel like most of them involve a team doing something unfortunate, like bad, like being bad at a task, not being able to do something, and another team being even worse. And we kind of saw that a little bit this week, the penalties, but usually there are some epic moments. I wouldn't call this the luckiest ever, because there are teams that seem to be lucky throughout the race. And Cedric and Tashawn, this was one moment. But, you know, it's not the lowest end either. It's definitely up there from recent memory.
Yeah, I think if we want to talk about not so recent memory, I got to go back to season 1 of the US version. We got to talk about Team Guido deciding to waste an entire day, and they really should have gone out, had Nancy and Emily not broken a rule and gotten a really unfair penalty that they really wouldn't have gotten in subsequent seasons. So that's like double luck right there.
That's a great example. That still bugs me. That whole episode, I love that episode because it makes the Guidos, they just like are so excited. And then it kind of, and again, they seem like really cool guys. They just of the first season, early reality TV were like the villains. But in All Stars were that way. But still, at the time, it was just like, it was heartbreaking to see that happen. And they should have been out at that point. And, you know, yeah. So that's a great example. And usually moments like that, that's like the opposite end. Because sometimes there are teams that you really like that survive when they shouldn't. Or even like we mentioned Lucy and Amelia, who had a few moments where it's like it seemed like they were going to be done, or they actually, you know, where a team played the save, or I don't think it was called the save.
The salvage pass.
That's again, it's a little less luck, but yeah, a lot of times it just has to be with teams. Well, like the Guidos making a terrible move or being really bad at something. And then somehow through various methods, not going out, and sometimes doing well or ending up in Alaska when the team checks them.
Yeah. And I mean, the karmic wheel definitely like came back around for Team Guido when they had the absolute unluckiest confluence of events when they came back for All Stars. So, you know, I think it all balances out in the end. I can't think of a time where I feel like a team got so much unearned luck that I didn't want to watch the show anymore, you know?
Well, no. And even non-eliminations, it's like the show, like, you know, I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories, but there have been enough teams that I wasn't particularly like the show didn't seem to like that much that survive with non-eliminations, where I think they are predetermined. But then, I mean, you have teams like that have won seasons, but it's like that is kind of the luck of the draw. Oh, luck, mm-hmm. Yes. But where it's like you better hope you have your bad leg at the right time. And there's been teams that have won, teams that have made the end that have had terrible legs. But, and you know, whether it's BJ and Tyler in season 9 or something that end up last, but it's at the right point. And I think sometimes the teams can kind of predict it, but not always.
Yeah. And I think you'd never bank on, You can never like sandbag yourself because you think it's going to be non-elimination. Like, that's just not how Amazing Race works. And yeah, I mean, Rob's feelings on non-elimination legs notwithstanding, I think non-elimination legs keep it interesting because you always do have to try because you never know what's going to happen. I think it keeps the teams motivated when you're in a situation where you clearly are going to get eliminated. What is your, you know, what's your incentive not to sandbag that? Well, you might not actually get eliminated. So, you know, I think you always have to, I think you need to have that luck baked into the show. I think that's part of what makes the show what it is.
Yeah. One more example is Zach and Flo in season 3 with the 2 in a row non-elimination legs, which is really rare. And it's one of those kind of like, wait, what? And they had the same reaction. And Flo almost seemed like she was very annoyed that they were not eliminated. But that's kind of one of those weird moments where it's like, sometimes fate intervenes and luck intervenes and then they end up winning. So,
yeah. And, you know, if you want to, anybody that's saying the Amazing Race is fixed, you'd only look at Zach and Flo. Like, why would you arrange a whole season around Zach and Flo being your winners? Like, what is the reason you would do that?
Yeah, everyone. Yeah, because that's true, because you had plenty of other storylines that could have worked. You had a really likable Kenneth Gerard. You know, you had Derek and Drew, you know, Terry and Ian. I think they, you know, they should have just revolved it around Terry and Ian.
Yes. If they're going to rig the season, they should have rigged it for Terry and Ian.
Yeah. So entertaining. That's the best part about rewatching that season beyond Ken and Gerard. Oh my gosh. But regardless, yes, I think that a show like this, I mean, I think luck probably comes into play a lot more than we ever see in the edit, because there's so much involved with the show. Like, in terms of, and then the edit is kind of telling the story, but so much is like bad taxi drivers. That's why I'm glad they do so much driving in this one in Amazing Race Canada, because so much is impacted by things you have no control over, like delayed flights and bad taxi drivers. But that's kind of part of what makes the show unpredictable and exciting. You can't just say this is the best team and they're going to win for sure.
Yeah, it's not, I don't want it to be like the same way I don't want the Survivor winner to be the person who won the most immunity challenges. Like, yeah, I want you to do well at the tasks. I want you to be a smart racer, but I don't want that to be the only thing that gets you to the end.
Yeah, there needs to be some balance, which granted it can be really unfair for teams, but it also, it's a TV show. And, you know, like, I don't know, you look at a team like Colin and Christy in season 5, who were legitimately seemed to be the strongest team. And still, I mean, it wasn't really luck that got them, but you know, a few weird tasks at the end and they don't win, but you know, they had a happy ending eventually when they came back, but still teams that seem to be the best team sometimes win. And that's often the most boring seasons though, unfortunately.
Yeah. Like, remember that whole pack in like the middle ages of Amazing Race where the winners were always like a young pair of either siblings or newly dating couples. And it was like, you looked at the cast at the beginning and you could pick out which team was going to win. I think there were a couple of seasons, like even the early days of RHAP, I would point out like, this team is the most boring team, so I think they're going to win. And I was right enough times that bears out.
I'm glad that I feel like, I mean, we'll see what happens with the upcoming US seasons, but I do feel like we're kind of hitting a different stride there with some of the recent winners and teams that have done well. So fingers crossed. I know you're still very good at picking. Hey, you know, if these teams come back next week, I might have a full team Dan back here though, Jess. So, you know, you never know, but it does seem like they're doing a little better job, especially with Amazing Race Canada, to do this.
Yeah. Definitely agree with that, Dan. So do we have anything else we need to cover before we wrap things up?
Well, this is such a long episode. This is the right point to bring this up. But Jess, I did try Guru Energy. I did purchase one. I went to a local Whole Foods and they had a giant display of it. It was like they'd been listening to the show. They were actually on sale for $1.80, just so you know. I did purchase a can of the regular, not the light. And it was fine. This is not the most exciting thing. You know, I thought about, should I try it on the show? But again, I will say if you are an energy drink person, I think, and also Jess, there were several people I saw drinking Guru during this episode this week. So we saw it. I saw people drinking.
They put it to their mouth and they appeared to be convincingly swallowing.
Yes, but I drank the whole thing. It was a lot they make a big deal about how a lot of the ingredients are organic. And again, if Guru wants to sponsor us, I think it's good. I will stand behind it. But there is a lot of sugar. So if you like energy drinks with sugar and with not that many ingredients, there's no xanthan gum or anything. But I will say it's flavored. The most strongest flavor is grape. It's kind of grape, but tastes like an energy drink. And but I was not painful to finish, I will say. I thought it was fine. I only purchased one, but I don't really drink, like I used to drink a lot of Diet Coke. I don't drink soda anymore. And so like really sweet drinks feel like a sugar bomb. And this feels like that. But if you're kind of more used to that, I suspect this would be fine. So my thought is, I think teams are drinking it, but I suspect they are not just guzzling cans because it doesn't feel like a drink that you would just take go to 7-Eleven and buy a 44 ounce soda or 44 ounce drink. It's more drank in smaller quantities, I would say.
And you don't think that there's any chance that they're doing like the wine tasting thing where they swish it around in their mouth and then spit it out?
No, I think Brendan and Connor, the way they're running around, I think they are drinking some Guru Energies, and they have been the ones that I've seen because they seem to have that extra, even if it's just sugar, that extra energy going there.
I was going to say, I don't think they need it.
You know, Jesse doesn't appear to be, you know, drinking that much, but, I will say, yeah, I don't think they're spitting it out. I don't think this is BioStrath level from what I've heard. But I would say this is no Clif Bars, because Clif Bars to me are almost too good. Like you eat them and you're like, I could just keep eating this, but it's like, it's not something you want to just eat a bunch of Clif Bars because that's, you know, a lot to it. But this, so I don't think this is as beloved as Clif Bars, but I also don't think this is like people are drinking it and just like, you know, gagging every time. That's my thought. But again, if we do a deep dive, we can ask the hard hitting questions like this one.
Yeah. Like, did you pour out the Guru Energy and fill it up with water so it looked like you were drinking it?
Yeah. So I know this has been a long episode, but I wanted to get that in while it was still fresh in the brain. But it was widely available in St. Louis, at least at the local Whole Foods. So I don't know if they were, you know, trying to remove more of them or if not, but there was a giant display there. So you may be able to find it. And I suspect you would possibly at that store. And Whole Foods is not sponsoring this episode. I'm just passing the info as the Amazing Race correspondent. I want you to know the truth.
Yeah. I mean, Dan, how trite and empty and vapid it would have been for us to have sponsors like the Unmitigated Gall.
How dare we take time for commercials? And we don't just, you know, Rob does not allow us to do this just out of goodness. I mean, of course, that is part of it because the Amazing Race Canada is a great show and I really enjoy talking about it. But, you know, there are things in the world that received money and that require it. So I think that's okay, Jess.
Yeah. And you know, Dan, there's a lot of different ways that we help keep the lights on around here. And the ads are one thing, and we appreciate you all for sticking by us, even though, you know, we're corporate sellouts. But another way you could support the podcast is you could become a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. And that gets you access to a lot of different perks, a lot of extra podcasts in your feed every week. You get access to a patron Discord, a patron Facebook group, and lots of other interesting patron perks, depending on the level of support. So you can go to robhaspodcast.com/Patreon. And I think that takes you right to Patreon to start the process of signing up to support us. And it really does help us keep the lights on. And, you know, Rob gets to let us do our Amazing Race Canada because there are other programs in the firmament that maybe get a little bit more listenership, but supporting all of the podcasts helps some of the podcasts continue to function. That's my plug. And Dan, I want to know what else is going on in your world this week.
Well, I do a podcast about theme parks, Tomorrow Society Podcast. I just had an episode That is nearly 2 hours all talking about ideas for ways that maybe Disney's Hollywood studios could be improved. It was really fun. Got a bunch of ideas from listeners. And if you've got a couple hours for some great fun ideas, a little bit nerdy about theme parks, that is the place, tomorrowsociety.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts, just like you are right now.
That's wonderful, Dan. And I wanted to throw in a plug for something that I did this week. I got to write a review of the upcoming Tales of the Walking Dead series over on Variety.com. And I've tweeted out the link to that. I'm very excited to have gotten the chance to write for them. And it was very fun to get a little sneak preview of what's going on in the Walking Dead universe, which we will be resuming over on Post Show Recaps. Our coverage of Walking Dead starts back up with coverage of the aforementioned Tales of the Walking Dead starting next week. And our usual panel will be back at it. And we're excited about that. So I think that's about it for us, Dan. Thanks again to everybody behind the scenes who helps keep this podcast going. Thanks to Scott and Tricky and Hannah and Chelsea and everybody else that does work for us. We appreciate everything you do for us, and we appreciate you, the listeners, as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.